Good morning.
Good morning. Ready to proceed?
My name is Nolan Monzak. Monzak in Monaco in Wilmington, Delaware. With me at the council table is my co-counsel, Michael Hoglin. And we represent what we refer to as the Acadia entities of the appellants in this case. The transaction which gives rise to ultimately us being here was a merger, a reverse merger, where the Acadia entities merged with the Rollins entities. The Rollins entities were the owners of various components of a property known as the Brandywine Town Center. The transaction was structured as a reverse merger because there were significant income tax benefits which the Acadia entities were able to retain by merging into the Rollins entities rather than the more traditional merger of where the newly formed Acadia entities would have been the survivors. The question before the court at this point, I think, can best be described as the application of the Delaware Transfer Tax Statute, and particularly the 1986 amendments to the Transfer Tax Statute, to this question of whether a transfer tax applies to the transaction, the reverse merger transaction.
Can I interrupt for a second? Is it your position that the transfer tax doesn't apply to any mergers or just this merger?
Our position, Your Honor, is that the transfer tax applies to no mergers, but particularly to this merger.
Okay.
That there are factors in this merger that go beyond just a straightforward merger transaction and add additional weight to support the conclusion that the transfer tax statute should not be applied here because there were independent business considerations. But even if there were not, our position would be the transfer tax statute does not apply to mergers.
What weight did the trial judge give to the independent business consideration?
Your Honor, I don't think they gave any weight to it, quite frankly. They noted it in their opinion. They, in the footnote, if I remember, of the lower court's opinion, there was a reference to the tax considerations that were a part of the reason why this was done as a reverse merger. But it doesn't appear that the court accorded any weight to that at all. The essential issue, in our view, is one of statutory construction. The fact is that words matter in a statute. The legislature expressed in 86 the intention to tax certain kinds of transactions. And to just read the specific language that I think is the Division of Revenue and Newcastle County seek to apply here: where beneficial ownership in real estate is transferred through a conveyance or a series of conveyances of intangible interest in a corporation, trust, or partnership, it is subject to the tax. Now, that's not what happened here. This was not a conveyance of intangible interest in a corporation, trust, or partnership. And when you look at the history of the 86 amendments, there are a couple of things that I think are very important.
Now, that's because of the way it was structured as opposed to the bottom line practical effect, isn't it?
Structure certainly has a great deal to do with what we think the outcome should be here. But again, just as words matter in a statute, Your Honor, our view is structure matters. The form of a transaction in Delaware means a great deal about the consequences of a transaction.
Is it your position that if the General Assembly intended to close a loophole, they didn't anticipate reverse mergers or any mergers at all as part of that effort?
I would say they didn't contemplate addressing mergers in the 86 statute, and in fact, I think the 86 amendments And in fact, I think the evidence shows the contrary, because remember, in 84, there was a merger exemption. The Division of Revenue, in its regulations, specifically exempted mergers in 1984. In 86, this amendment was passed. It doesn't mention mergers. The Division of Revenue regulations do not mention mergers. The merger exemption, for anybody who would look on the website now of the Division of Revenue, it's in full force and effect. And I think the presumption should be, not that they forgot about it, but that they intentionally didn't do it, because I think the court should assume that the legislature knew this merger exemption was there, and if they intended to tax mergers, they would have said so. And it wouldn't have been difficult to do. And I think, as we pointed out, for example, Pennsylvania, where the transfer tax statute in Pennsylvania was the precursor to the Delaware statute. Delaware modeled its statute on Pennsylvania. The issue of taxation of mergers, transfer tax opposed to mergers, came up in Pennsylvania. The legislature of Pennsylvania created a specific provision that said these kinds of mergers are going to be taxed. That could have been done here. The legislature presumptively knew it had been done in Pennsylvania. They certainly knew that there was an 84 merger exemption when they amended the statute in 86, and they didn't address it. And
do you know, as far as the legislative history, was the amendment, I assume it was proposed by the Division of Revenue, was it vetted with the corporate bar?
Don't know the answer to that, Your Honor. We can't find anything in looking at the legislative history that bears on that question, and whether or not there was, for example, a specific policy reason why mergers were not taxed. That may or may not be true. There's nothing that we can find that suggests one way or another whether that topic was addressed specifically.
One way in which transfers of realty are documented is by filing the appropriate papers in the Recorder of Deeds office, which requires a certification that tax has been paid. As I at least understand this merger, there were no transfer documents filed, were there?
There were not, Your Honor.
Is that legally significant, do you think?
I think it is, because the merger exemption, the 84 merger exemption, basically says mergers are not subject to a transfer tax unless you file a deed. Unless a deed is recorded as part of the transaction, we're not going to tax mergers. So here, as Your Honor points out, there were no documents recorded as part of this merger transaction. And in fact, when we ultimately determined we will pay an amount equal to what the transfer tax would have been, file a declaratory judgment action to get the money refunded, which is the process that we initiated to get here, there was a lot of confusion as to how we could do that within the Superior Court. We had a hard time getting them to take the money initially, because they really had no process in place to do it. So again, I think that all bears on the ultimate outcome. And I would point out as well, when we talk about form of transactions and why it's important, for example, the DeSabatino case, which is a case we cited in our brief, where the court was looking at a transfer of a sale of partnership interest as subject was itself subject to the Delaware earned income tax for non-residents. The court said basically, we don't tax sales of partnership interest. If the partnership had sold the real estate, it would have been subject to the tax. There's nothing in our statute that taxes the sale of partnership interest. We're not going to tax it. We suggest this is really what we're talking about here. And the principle goes beyond this case, I think. It goes in taxing statutes in Delaware historically are strictly construed. You look at the language. You have to focus on the specific language of the statute. And while this case was a large transaction with a lot of money involved, it could easily be a small case with a little bit of money involved, and not necessarily a transfer tax statute, but any taxing statute. I think there's a basic principle here that really needs to be followed, which is if you want to tax something, you've got to be very clear about what it is you're taxing. Historically as well, and this is almost anecdotal, before 86, as you may know, it was very common to avoid the transfer tax in Delaware through transfer of partnership interest, transfer of beneficial interest in a trust, transfer of corporate stock. Obviously, that became a concern of the Division of Revenue, and they addressed it specifically. They didn't address mergers. And I think that's the key point here. And again, the transfer statute talks in language of a conveyance. Mergers are an exchange. Mergers operate by, or an exchange or conversion, I think is the language in the merger statute. They function by operation of law. They're in effect self-executing, and there are a number of Delaware cases that deal with mergers and what they mean, and they all say essentially the same thing. A merger is not a transfer of intangible interest. It just happens automatically by virtue of the form of the structure. It was clear in the synopsis of the legislation and in the language of the legislation that dealt with the 86 amendments exactly what it was that the legislature focused on. And just dealing from having practiced in this area for a long time, these are the forms of transactions that were typically utilized pre-86 to avoid a transfer tax.
Well, is a document really required? What if somebody just has a company that owns real estate and they just outright sell all the stock for?
A document is not required if you transfer stock. I mean, that's what I think the 86 amendments addressed, Your Honor. If you transfer stock and, in effect, transfer beneficial ownership in real estate through the transfer of stock, it's subject to the transfer tax. No, you do not need a document for a transfer of stock, a transfer of partnership interest, or a transfer of beneficial ownership.
And that's covered
in a trust. But you don't, I'm sorry, Your Honor.
That's covered under 54017C, or is there another subsection that would deal with that directly? For an outright sale of stock for cash?
Well, I think that's what the 86 amendments did. They said if you transfer, I mean, just to go back to the language that I referenced initially, where beneficial ownership in real estate is transferred through a conveyance. Or a series of conveyances of intangible interest in a corporation, partnership, or trust, it's subject to the transfer tax. No document is not a requirement that you record a document. The merger exemption says mergers are not subject to the transfer tax unless you record a document. And that is that's the statutory and regulatory scheme that exists right now. And that, again, I mean, I think that the points are fairly basic ones. The statute has got to be construed strictly. The language of the statute is very specific about what it taxes, and it says nothing about mergers. And when you look historically at the merger exemption that's out there in 84, when they amend the statute in 86 and don't address mergers at all. When you look at the history of the Pennsylvania statute, which dealt specifically with mergers, and it's not difficult to address this issue if the legislature wants to do it. It's easy. They can look at the Pennsylvania statute. Pennsylvania, I think, says that if you've got a company that 90% of its assets are real estate, then you are a real estate company. If you're a real estate company and you merge, you're subject to the transfer tax. Easy enough to do.
Does this transaction, as interpreted by the Superior Court, as subject to a realty transfer tax, would that holding in any way affect the basis of the property? Does that have a spin-off effect on
it? It does not, Your Honor. I mean, the basis of the property is has been preserved in the form of the reverse merger. The transfer tax does not affect that at all. It's just a separate issue about whether the transfer tax should be applied to the transaction or not. Your Honor, if there are no more questions, I'd just like to reserve the balance of my time. I think I've made the points that I hope to make.
Thank you very much, Mr. Monza.
Thank you, Your Honor.
If it pleases the Court, Mr. Chief Justice, Justices, my name is Pat Hurley. I'm with the Department of Justice, and I represent the Delaware Division of Revenue in this matter. I'd like to begin by noting that the appellants indicate that the transaction at issue here was structured as a merger. I think it's fundamental to note that the transaction is, as the Superior Court found, a sale of real estate. And as a sale of real estate, even though it was accomplished through the use of intangibles, if the beneficial ownership of the intangible interests meets the requirements of 5401(7), then it may be taxed by the state under the realty transfer tax.
If there wasn't a cash out, would that be your position?
No, Your Honor. Any transfer, or if the court will, a merger that results in the exchange of stock for stock or anything else of value would result in a tax based upon the value of what was, if you will, paid or transferred or exchanged in the transaction.
The cash out, if there was a cash out but it happened 5 years from now, would that change your position?
I'm not sure I understand the question.
I mean, is it the fact that this is all bundled together which makes it a sale of real estate, or is it the fact that there was a merger?
The transaction that results in the tax is the merger. If there is a subsequent cash out 4 or 5 years down the road where the stockholders receive cash in exchange for their shares because the company is being taken private or some other corporate event, that would not result in any transfer tax. The transfer tax would flow from the beneficial change in ownership of the real estate, and that occurred by virtue of this particular merger, and that's why the transfer tax is subject to tax. That's why this transaction is subject to tax. Under the 1986 amendment, I think you need two things. One, you need a transfer of beneficial interest. And secondly, that is properly characterized as a sale of real estate. And there are four factors that are enumerated in the statute and about which the division has issued regulations.
Can I interrupt you, because the regulation point is of some concern to me, I guess. That 1984 regulation still is out there, right?
That's correct.
Was that oversight or what?
I don't believe it oversight. I still believe that regulation has validity. If the DuPont company merged with Bristol-Myers Squibb or some other corporate entity, I don't believe under the four-prong test enumerated in the regulations that could be characterized as the sale of real estate. You certainly would have the transfer of the beneficial ownership in the real estate that the DuPont company owned in Delaware and elsewhere into the surviving corporation, in my example, presumably Bristol-Myers. That would still be the result of the merger, but there would be no transfer tax because the transaction is not properly characterized as a sale of real estate. So in that instance, the 84 regulation would apply, and if Bristol-Myers wanted to record a deed, then the recordation of that deed as a result of or part of or in the context of the merger would result in a realty transfer tax under the regulations as they were written in 84 before the so-called loophole closing legislation was enacted.
Okay, here's my concern. The 84 regulation says if it's a merger and you don't file any documents, you don't pay a transfer tax, right?
Correct.
Period. Nothing about what kind of a merger it is or, you know, what the four factors or any of that stuff. Okay. Now, the legislation gets changed a couple of years later, but the legislation doesn't specifically identify a merger, right?
Does not.
Okay. And the regulation that says mergers without documents are not taxable, that's still on the books. So how do you explain that that regulation still existing when there's now a new test for whether a merger is or isn't? It's not whether you recorded documents, it's whether it's in essence a sale of real estate, right?
Well, under the 86 legislation, there was a substantial change in the application of the tax made by the statute. The new regulations address how that change is to be applied. To the extent But that regulation only applies in circumstances where there is some exchange or transfer of intangible interest that can properly be characterized as a sale. If you don't characterize or can't get to the point where the transfer of beneficial interest is a sale under the regulation, then you look at the remainder of the law as it exists, and that would address mergers that are not sales or other transfers of intangibles that are not properly characterized as sales of real estate. To be sure, it's a narrow area after the loophole closing, but it still exists and still has applicability to a particular narrow series or transfers that aren't sales of real estate under the new regulation.
So you're basically saying that the old regulation still has some validity and that you have to look to the new regulation and the new statute first.
Yes,
and
you
then
have.
If there's anything left over, so to speak,
yep.
Then you might get to the old regulation, but that the old regulation doesn't have any validity beyond that.
That's correct. You have to take the two things, the two regulations, and I don't believe they're inconsistent at all, because one applies only if the transfer of intangibles can be characterized as a sale. If you can't characterize the merger as a sale of real estate, then that regulation doesn't apply.
Why does this sound to me like, and maybe this is a difficult way to phrase a question, you're trying to accomplish by argument what Pennsylvania clearly and specifically accomplished by statute, which is to say, in essence, that if a merger is predominantly for the basis of transferring interest in real property, it constitutes a conveyance, which is subject to the merger, or subject to the realty transfer tax. You keep using the phrase properly characterized as a sale, but how do we get to being properly characterized as a sale of real estate when you have the 1984 regulation that exempts mergers and have nothing addressed in the 1986 legislation that purports to change that, as Pennsylvania did, clearly and expressly?
Clearly, the 86 amendment did not use the word merger. It instead took a different tack to closing the loophole. Pennsylvania had its own view of the best way to accomplish that. Delaware had a different way. Delaware's way is, in, if you will, to attack the problem from a broad perspective, to deal with any transfer of intangibles, not just mergers.
Well, the, your your adversary here says a merger is not a transfer of intangibles. You begin your whole argument with the premise that we should accept the fact that a merger is a transfer of intangibles.
Well, we disagree with that premise, and yes, it is the position of the director that a merger effectively affects a transfer of intangible ownership interests.
But that's not the Delaware case law, is it?
Well, Your Honor, that, as far as we're concerned, is consistent with the Delaware case law and something that has not been really addressed by this court or any other court to date. What you have is a statute that says in the limited liability company that a merger affects a conversion, I think the language is conversion or exchange. What you have in the, if you find the word exchange, the research in my brief indicates that the word transfer is used in the definition of exchange. The word transfer appears in the definition of conveyance, and the realty transfer tax uses the word transfer. So of the four words in the two statutes, transfer is predominant, the idea of a transfer. It's our position that conversion and exchange are generic, just as conveyance and transfer are. When the two statutes are taken together, given the legislature's intent to close a loophole, when you speak about sales of real estate that are structured as intangible dealings. Therefore, the corporate cases that control relationships between stockholders and the company, most of the cases deal with preferred dividend, the termination of preferred dividends in a merger, or whether or not any assignment provision in a merger activates a right of sale or first refusal to sell stock in a merger context, as do all the other cases. The Star Cellular case that's cited by my opponent supports that. In that case, the chancellor decided that transfer had no particular specific determinative meaning and was a word of general application, if you will, a generic concept. And let's face it, when a stockholder goes through a merger, his stock in one company goes away, evaporates by operation of law. And he gets something else. He gets stock in a new corporation. He can get real estate. He can get cash. He can get personal property. He can get anything that the statute permits. But that's a transfer as to him of that interest into something else. That's precisely what the statute is designed to reach, so long as the beneficial interest, the dealings, can be characterized as a sale of real estate under the prongs that the legislature inserted in the loophole closing statute. And we think that those two factors control this and support the trial court's decision that this was a taxable event.
Do you agree that there was a business purpose for this merger other than avoidance of the realty transfer tax?
Yes. But the business purpose was to acquire the real estate. The business purpose was to acquire the real estate. The particular basis...
But what I meant by my question was that there was a business reason for affecting this transaction by merger rather than by any other basis or any other form of transfer.
I'm not sure that I'm competent to speak as to the motives and the structure of this particular transaction and everything that the taxpayers were intending to accomplish.
Well, do you agree
yes.
that they preserved the basis in the property by
yes,
affecting
I
it by merger?
I agree that they preserved the basis in the property.
Do you also agree with their point that taxing statutes in Delaware are to be construed narrowly?
I don't necessarily disagree with that. That is what basically is the older case law. The more modern approach is to interpret statutes like taxes or any other statute in a reasonable manner. I will say that...
Well, you do think it's unreasonable to say that there are limitations on government's power to tax?
Not at all.
And when government isn't explicit in the way in which it wishes to tax?
Not at all.
That it be held accountable for it?
Not at all. I think you can't extend by implication the tax...
Why is there a modern view that we should interpret statutes that tax either on their face or liberally as opposed to narrowly?
The view in terms of the approach to tax statutes deals more with the implications of collection and the abuses that the government can assert when attempting to collect the tax that they say is due. Regardless of the approach the court takes to this particular statute, quite clearly, it's a loophole closing provision that is broadly written, and it would be inappropriate to sort of interpret the legislative intent out of the statute.
It's broadly written to the extent there's a transfer of an intangible interest, so we're still have to get beyond that.
That was the election that the legislature made in determining how best to close the statute. I suggest that the broader is better because the ingenuity of the bar is such that structure and form can be invented to circumvent things that the legislature has attempted to reach.
Shouldn't we presume that the legislature knows that a merger is not a transfer of an intangible interest when it adopted the statute?
I don't believe that.
That's what the case law said at that time.
Well, I don't know that the case law says that a merger isn't a transfer of intangible interest. It's not a sale. And clearly, in the other context, there's not... the position that the director takes, and I think supported by the corporate case law, is that when a merger occurs, the stock of the company, the ownership in one company, is transferred, exchanged, converted into something different. And that's precisely what the statute was getting at.
You're into your colleague's time.
Sorry.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Please, the court. I'm Dennis Siebold from Newcastle County Law Department. I certainly do adopt many of the arguments that have been presented on behalf of the state.
Which are the ones that you do not adopt?
I'm sorry, I do adopt the arguments that are presented by you.
Just so you know, it's very difficult to keep me clear, so I just wanted to make sure.
The county agrees that the primary rule of construction is to arrive at the intention of the legislature, and we believe that the legislative intent in adopting the amendment to 54017 was to broadly construe to close the loophole that permitted parties to evade the payment of transfer tax through transactions that involve corporate maneuvering of whatever nature. We believe, therefore, as Mr. Hurley was saying, that a broad interpretation of corporate structures that are used for evading the transfer tax should be looked at by this court.
Well, then we get back to what I perceive to be at least part of the reason Justice Berger asked her question. If that's so, why does the 1984 regulation still exist on the books?
I can't speak to that, Your Honor, because those regulations are the states, not the counties. So I can't really justify why regulations are there or are not there.
At a minimum, it's a recognition that mergers are different.
They are different, Your Honor, but again, I don't believe that the structure is important. I think that the legislature intended to close the loophole, and I think there the reference that the appellants were making to the Pennsylvania experience breaks down, because I think that the Delaware legislature deliberately took a effort to take a broad approach rather than the specific approach taken by the Pennsylvania legislature. The Delaware legislature deliberately took an effort to take a broad approach.
Is there any legislative history, synopsis, or otherwise
that suggests that? Not that I'm aware of, Your Honor. I think it was all broadly taken.
So we're left with the face of the statute.
I believe
any regulations
so, Your Honor.
That
yes,
were adopted?
That and the synopsis that was attached to the legislature, to the legislation, which was broadly written again. And just to address very briefly, since I don't have much time, the point that Justice Ridgely made with respect to the transfer and the corporate law, the Star Cellular telephone decision that was relied upon by the appellants did say, as Mr. Hurley pointed out, that transfer has no plain or generally prevailing meaning. And in that case, the court found that the merger created no material change in the control of the operation of that partnership and noted that the change was purely formal. In this case, on the other hand, there was a legal change in substance. And in that case, that is a significant difference between this case and those corporate cases. There was a significant change of substance in the ownership of that entity, and that is what the court below found, that there was a total change in substance between the ownership before and after that conveyance, and that was the change that led that court to reach the conclusion that it made and to find that there was no purpose other than the sale of real estate. And we believe that's why the court reached the decision that it made below. Thank you, Your Honor.
Just a few points I would like to make in rebuttal. First, I don't think the state's explanation of the existence of the merger exemption is just not logical. If a transaction were exempt under the 86 Act, you wouldn't need to get to the merger exemption in 84. And they talk about the four factors test, and if it meets that, then you go to the merger exemption. Well, you'd never get there. If it's exempt in 86, what do you have to look at the 84 merger exemption for?
Let me interrupt for a second. A statute trumps a regulation, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
What if the 1984 regulation continued existence were more in the nature of oversight than anything else that's now trying to be explained in a way that sounds good? Would that matter in terms of there's been legislation since that time? The legislation seems to be inconsistent with what that regulation provided, or at least arguably it is, and the legislation wins.
If you presume those facts, I suppose that would be the result. But I think what the court should presume here is you have an 84 merger exemption. It's there. And there's no evidence to suggest that this was an oversight at all. There's nothing in the legislative history, there's nothing in the statute, there's nothing anywhere to suggest that it was an oversight. The presumption, Your Honor, I think should be, the legislature knew it was there, and they purposely, if you presume anything, you should presume they intentionally did not address mergers because they didn't want to address mergers. That should be the presumption. I mean, again, I mean, we're talking about a system of statutory construction, the function of the court versus the function of the legislature, and it just seems to me that the court shouldn't presume things that there's no evidence anywhere to support. The evidence points to the contrary, points to the fact they knew there was a merger exemption out there, and they chose in 86 not to address it. And the language of the statute, the language of the statute is not broad at all. It's very specific. It's very specific. It says where beneficial ownership in real estate is transferred through a conveyance. They talk about transfer and they try to, I think, cloud the meaning of that term. They never talk about conveyance. It's a transfer through a series of conveyances. That's the statutory language. That's what it says. A merger is not a transfer, and it's certainly not a conveyance. And there's no Delaware case that suggests otherwise. And that is what the statute says. That's the language. That's what it addresses. So, and I think the court below, the challenge we have to the opinion of the court below is they got into this four-factor test and kind of presumed away that the transfer tax statute covers mergers. When we think all the evidence, the language, the history, to the extent we have a history, contradicts that.
Well, if we got that far, as the trial court did, do you agree that applying the four factors leads to the conclusion that the trial court reached?
Not necessarily, because I think the court, even if you got that far, because the court acknowledged, the Superior Court acknowledged there was an independent business purpose here. And even the regulations say that's the predominant factor when you assess these. So even if you've got to the four-factor analysis, it seems to me you should still look at, well, the predominant factor is, was there an independent business purpose? The Superior Court acknowledged there was an independent business purpose. So I would say no, the result would not necessarily be to tax this transaction.
What is your response to the suggestion that the rule announced in Consolidated Fisheries that in every case of doubt, statutes are construed more strongly against the taxing power and in favor of the citizen because burdens are not to be imposed beyond what the statutes expressly and clearly import? It's been suggested that that's some ancient and hoary rule that the progressive and modern view has changed. Is there anything that you know of in the case law to suggest that we've made this monumental social and cultural shift from 1943 to 2005?
Absolutely not, Your Honor. And there's no reason that I can see to do that. I mean, that's the whole principle, it seems to me, again, of you got a legislative branch, they enact statutes, they got a court that interprets them. The court shouldn't have to be charged with having to look at things that there's no, look at things as the wrong characterization. There's nothing to look at. There's no there, as the expression.
Do you have any case that suggests the rule from 1943 no longer exists in Delaware?
No, Your Honor. None at all. Thank you. I have nothing further.
Thank you very much, counsel, for a very interesting argument. We'll take the case under advisement. You'll hear from us shortly.
Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. All manner of persons having anything before the Supreme Court of the State of Delaware may now depart and give their attendance to the call of the court. The court is now adjourned. God save the state and the honorable court.